There was such a clatter and rasping, and clinking of gold and grinding of stones as he rushed out of the cave, that he thought they were both following him. He daren't look back. He rushed to the pool. The twisted shape of the dead dragon lying in the moonlight would have been enough to frighten anyone, but now he hardly noticed it. His idea was to get into the water. But just as he reached the edge of the pool, two things happened. First of all, it came over him like a thunderclap that he had been running on all fours. And why on earth had he been doing that? And secondly, as he bent toward the water, he thought for a second that yet another dragon was staring up at him out of the pool. But in an instant he realized the truth. The dragon face in the pool was his own reflection. There was no doubt of it. It moved as he moved. It opened and shut its mouth as he opened and shut his. He had turned into a dragon while he was asleep. Sleeping on a dragon's hoard, with greedy, dragonish thoughts in his heart, he had become a dragon himself. That explained everything. There had been no two dragons beside him in the cave. The claws to right and left had been his own right and left's claws. The two columns of smoke had been coming from his own nostrils. As for the pain in his left arm, or what had been his left arm, he could now see what had happened by squinting with his left eye. The bracelet, which had fitted very nicely on the upper arm of a boy, was far too small for the thick, stumpy foreleg of a dragon. It had sunk deeply into his scaly flesh, and there was a throbbing bulge on each side of it. He tore at the place with his dragon's teeth, but could not get it off. In spite of the pain, his first feeling was one of relief. There was nothing to be afraid of any more. He was a terror himself now, and nothing in the world but a knight, and not all of those, would dare to attack him. He could get even with Caspian and Edmund now. But the moment he thought this, he realized that he didn't want to. He wanted to be friends. He wanted to get back among humans, and talk, and laugh, and share things. He realized that he was a monster cut off from the whole human race. An appalling loneliness came over him. He began to see what the others... He began to see that the others had not really been fiends at all. He began to wonder if he himself had been such a nice person as he had always supposed. He longed for their voices. He would have been grateful for a kind word even from Rinpoche. When he thought of this, the poor dragon that had been Eustace lifted up its voice and wept. A powerful dragon crying its eyes out under the moon in a deserted valley is a sight and a sound hardly to be imagined. At last he decided he would try to find his way back to the shore. He realized now that Caspian would never have sailed away and left him, and he felt sure that somehow or other he would be able to make people understand who he was. He took a long drink, and then—I know this sounds shocking, but it isn't if you think it over—he ate nearly all the dead dragon. He was halfway through it before he realized what he was doing, for you see, though his mind was the mind of Eustace, his tastes and his digestion were dragonish. And there's nothing a dragon likes so well as fresh dragon. That is why you so seldom find more than one dragon in the same country. Then he turned to climb out of the valley. He began the climb with a jump, and as soon as he jumped, he found that he was flying. He had quite forgotten about his wings, and it was a great surprise to him, the first pleasant surprise he had had for a long time. He rose high into the air and saw innumerable mountain tops spread out beneath him in the moonlight. He could see the bay like a silver slab, and the Dawn Treader lying at anchor, and campfires twinkling in the woods beside the beach. From a great height he launched himself down toward them in a single glide. Lucy was sleeping very soundly, for she had sat up till the return of the search party in hope of good news about Eustace. It had been led by Caspian, and had come back late and weary. Their news was disquieting. They had found no trace of Eustace, but had seen a dead dragon in a valley. They tried to make the best of it, and everyone assured everyone else that there were not likely to be more dragons about, and that one which was dead at about 3 o'clock that afternoon, which was when they had seen it, would hardly have been killing people a very few hours before. "Unless it ate the little brat and died of him, he'd poison anything," said Rince. But he said this under his breath, and no one heard it. But later in the night Lucy was wakened very softly, and found the whole company gathered close together and talking in whispers. "What is it?" said Lucy. "We must all show great constancy," Caspian was saying. "A dragon has just flown over the treetops and lighted on the beach. Yes, I am afraid it is between us and the ship, and arrows are no use against dragons, and they're not at all afraid of fire." "With your Majesty's leave," began Rinpoche. "No, Rinpoche," said the king very firmly, "you are not to attempt a single combat with it. And unless you promise to obey me in this matter, I'll have you tied up. We must just keep close watch, and as soon as it is light, go down to the beach and give it battle. I will lead. King Edmund will be on my right, and the Lord Rinian on my left. There are no other arrangements to be made. It will be light in a couple of hours. In an hour's time, let a meal be served out, and what is left of the wine, and let everything be done silently." "Perhaps it will go away," said Lucy. "It'll be worse if it does," said Edmund, "because then we shan't know where it is. If there's a wasp in the room, I like to be able to see it." The rest of the night was dreadful, and when the meal came, though they knew they ought to eat, many found that they had very poor appetites. And endless hours seemed to pass before the darkness thinned, and birds began chirping here and there, and the world got colder and wetter than it had been all night, and Caspian said, "Now for it, friends." They got up, all with swords drawn, and formed themselves into a solid mass, with Lucy in the middle and Rinpoche on her shoulder. It was nicer than the waiting about, and everyone felt fonder of everyone else than at ordinary times. A moment later they were marching. It grew lighter as they came to the edge of the wood, and there on the sand, like a giant lizard or a flexible crocodile, or a serpent with legs, huge and horrible and humpy, lay the dragon. But when it saw them, instead of rising up and blowing fire and smoke, the dragon retreated, you could almost say it waddled, back into the shallows of the bay. "What's it wagging its head like that for?" said Edmund. "And now it's nodding," said Caspian. "And there's something coming from its eyes," said Rinian. "Oh, can't you see?" said Lucy. "It's crying. Those are tears." "I shouldn't trust that, ma'am," said Rinian. "That's what crocodiles do, to put you off your guard." "It wagged its head when you said that," remarked Edmund, "just as if it meant no. Look, there it goes again." "Do you think it understands what we're saying?" asked Lucy. The dragon nodded its head violently. Rinpoche slipped off Lucy's shoulder and stepped to the front. "Dragon," came his shrill voice, "can you understand speech?" The dragon nodded. "Can you speak?" It shook its head. "Then," said Rinpoche, "it is idle to ask you your business, but if you will swear friendship with us, raise your left foreleg above your head." It did so, but clumsily, because that leg was sore and swollen with the golden bracelet. "Oh, look," said Lucy, "there's something wrong with its leg. The poor thing, that's probably what it was crying about. Perhaps it came to us to be cured, like in Androcles and the lion." "Be careful, Lucy," said Caspian. "It's a very clever dragon, but it may be a liar." Lucy had, however, already run forward, followed by Rinpoche, as fast as his short legs could carry him, and then, of course, the boys and Rinian came too. "Show me your poor paw," said Lucy. "I might be able to cure it." The dragon that had been Eustace held out its sore leg gladly enough, remembering how Lucy's cordial had cured him of seasickness before he became a dragon. But he was disappointed. The magic fluid reduced the swelling and eased the pain a little, but it could not dissolve the gold. Everyone had now crowded round to watch the treatment, and Caspian suddenly exclaimed, "Look!" He was staring at the bracelet.